Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive. I've got another amazing interview for you. The title is called Mail Order Maverick Joe Sugarman Reveals How to Be Super Successful Just by Learning to Turn Obstacles into Opportunities. Joe Sugarman is one of the country's greatest copywriters. Joe Sugarman has had some amazing and memorable successes. He revolutionized mail order marketing back in the 1970s, started a mega famous Blue Blockers sunglasses company, and has written 3 very profitable books. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how he's become super successful and how you can do it too. And it might just be as simple as changing your philosophy on failure. Joe says very few people have had as many failures as he has in life. But because he believes that there's a hidden opportunity in every problem, he's never let failure keep him down for long. And in this audio, you'll hear exactly how he turned his problems into super success stories and how you can learn to find hidden opportunities too. You'll also learn the surefire yet unexpected way you can look around at your friends and family and know for certain you've got a winning business idea. You'll learn how to create the ultimate goal of marketing, branding, and how you know when you've achieved it. You'll learn why you should never focus on money if you want to have money in life and what you should be focusing on instead. You'll learn the 3 things you must do if you want to have a super successful business in today's economy. You'll learn how to use the feeling of involvement, ownership, in your internet marketing campaigns to drive sales to new heights. You'll learn 2 quick start tips for anyone thinking about breaking into the copywriting field. You'll learn 1 simple phrase Joe used that tripled his response rates overnight. Joe Sugarman says, if you want to be successful in business, you should learn all the rules so you can carefully follow them one by one. But if you want to be super successful, you've got to learn all the rules so you can break them right and left. And in this audio interview, you'll hear how he did it, along with the other little known inside secrets that super successful people use to climb to the top. I hope you enjoy this interview. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Arthur Robinson Jr. I teamed up with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com to bring you the greatest interviews on subject matter you won't find anywhere else. Can you educate my listeners in regards to who you are, how long have you been in your powerful industry, and what is your expertise?
Well, I think the strongest thing I have is, let's say, the power of my pen. In other words, I am a writer, and through my writing, I have been able to create persuasive messages that brought me success. So I would say it's just my ability to write. Also, I think another thing is the fact that I've had so many failures. I've had this philosophy also that has helped me a lot, and that is that for every problem lies within that problem an opportunity so big that it dwarfs the problem. And so whenever I have problems, whenever I have failures, I look at the situation and I say to myself, okay, where is the opportunity here? Sometimes there is no opportunity. You just have to take your lumps. But would you like a couple examples?
Yes, I would.
Well, I think probably a good example is the toll-free number. Before there was toll-free order taking, the credit card company did not allow you to take an order over the telephone because they insisted on having the signature of the person purchasing your product. So we had to sign an agreement with the credit card companies that we would have the signature of the client. Well, in the beginning, one of my first products that I discovered was the pocket calculator. I noticed that there were a lot of people who would call me and say, Mr. Sugarman, we need this calculator right away, but we don't have time to fill out the coupon and send it it in and sign it and all that kind of stuff. So I would take a chance, and I'd sign their name for them, and I'd send out the calculator. And I did this for about 6 months. And, you know, it was a problem. I looked at this problem, and I said to myself, well, where's the opportunity in here? And I said, I know that nobody has taken advantage of me. Nobody has ripped me off in any way. I looked at one of my ads, and there was a coupon on it. And right above the coupon, I decided I would put the line, credit card buyers call toll free. It was small because I didn't want to draw attention. So I ran the ad, and I acquired some toll free numbers. And we were deluged with orders, and by noon we had broken even, which before used to take a week, 10 days, 2 weeks sometimes to know if you broke even, because it took a while for all those orders to come in, and the checks or the credit card numbers and the signatures and all that stuff. So by noon I knew I had a winner, so I kept advertising. I put this little line in there, credit card buyers call toll free. Well, I did that for about 6 months. And then I get a call from the Dell Systems, and they were the people who were in charge of selling toll-free numbers. And they called me up and they said, Mr. Sugarman, we have been observing your activity, and we would like to feature your company and your success in a full-page ad in the Wall Street Journal. And I said, well, you know, it's illegal what I'm doing. I said, it's not the correct thing to do. And they said, no, we've already talked to the credit card companies. We've been monitoring you. We've been following your success, and we realize a great opportunity that you probably have discovered. So, sure enough, they featured me in the Wall Street Journal, and as a result of that discovery and of that combination of things that I put together and made happen, because of that problem that I turned into an opportunity, the whole direct marketing industry exploded. Catalogs started to proliferate. Mail order ads, fulfillment centers, call centers. In other words, it created a number of industries in direct marketing and increased the potential of direct marketing as a great vehicle. I have this philosophy that if you want to be successful, you learn all of the rules and you follow them one by one. But if you want to be super successful, you learn all of the rules and you break them one by one. Mm-hmm. I don't mean illegally or anything like that, but you understand what I'm saying. In other words, you've got to think out of the box. You've got to think different. And that's how I discovered Blue Blocker, Blue Blocker Sunglasses. This is a company that I started, and it originated from a problem. I was with a friend of mine, manufacturer's representative, taking me to see a product, and I was squinting. It was a bright, sunny day in Los Angeles. We were driving down the 405. So he saw me squinting, and he handed me a pair of sunglasses, and I put them on, and I said, wow. I said, I'm not squinting anymore, and things appear sharper and clearer. What's the story behind these? Well, he told me. He says they were made for NASA, and he told me the background about ultraviolet light, which I never knew, and the danger of blue light and the diseases they cause and all sorts of interesting things. And I said, wow, this would be a great mail order item. And he said, nah, the company's going out of business, so they're not going to be around very much longer. Don't worry about it. You shouldn't be interested in this product. So I didn't think much of it, went back to Chicago, and we were doing an 8-page catalog for United Airlines, and it was to be inserted in their magazine. And one of the products I discovered dropped out because the company went bankrupt, so I had to fill it in with a new product. I had a problem. So I called my friend. I said, look, I need that pair of sunglasses. I'll figure out a way to make them. I've got a couple months before the ad breaks, before the response comes in. Send me that pair. And he did, and I ran it in that insert. Well, it turned out to be the best-selling product in our history from that one ad. It was exciting, so I arranged to manufacture them in the Far East, and I placed $1 million worth of national advertising over 8 months, and I sold about 100,000 pair of them, and that was working out really well. And then I heard about infomercials. The government allowed now your right to run a half-hour commercial. Before that, that was illegal. So I said, you know, I think this would really work. And I had a lot of people saying, who would buy a pair of sunglasses off an infomercial? I mean, how could you spend a half hour selling something like that? That's ridiculous. And by the way, that's a really good sign. When people don't think you have a chance or if they try to discourage you, that should be an indication to you that you've got something. I've always followed that. When people said, no, that's impossible, I go out and I prove them wrong. So anyway, we ran the infomercial, and instead of selling 100,000 pair over 8 months, within a month we were selling 100,000 pair. And within 3 or 4 years, our sales were climbing. We were doing like 300,000 a month. Eventually sold 20 million pair, and that was on QVC. That was all over the world. Our infomercial appeared in many countries all over the world. And it was a really good run. Now, the funny part about it is we're having a resurgence. There was a movie called The Hangover, and they featured our Blue Blockers. And well, sure enough, I mean, we're getting a lot of response and a lot of young people, a lot of rock groups, everybody's starting to gravitate towards Blue Blockers. So it's still very much alive. I started that business 23 years ago, again, turning a problem into an opportunity.
What exactly is a mail order?
Mail order, or another way to say it is direct response, is where you place an ad in a publication and you offer your product or service directly to the consumer. When we were selling our calculators, we had an ad that appeared first in the magazines, and you didn't have to worry about retail. You didn't have to worry about all the other complications when you go to retail. I didn't need retail. I could sell my products directly to the consumer. And another thing, you sell to retail, they sometimes take months to pay you. With mail order, people send you their credit card numbers or their checks, and you've got the money in advance even before you ship. So it's a lot more advantageous, and it's a very good method to market.
What is your definition of marketing?
What is marketing? Well, it's positioning of a product in such a way that it appeals to the consumer. Well, you know, it's a good question, because you could have the greatest product, you could have the greatest science, you could have all the money behind your product, you could have everything, but if you don't have marketing, you have nothing. Therefore, marketing is extremely important. And if you're successful in your marketing program and you repeat that program very often, chances are you will create the ultimate goal of marketing, which is creating a brand. And if you can create a brand, that is so important in marketing. Why? I have to just mention Blue Blocker, and most people would recognize that name, and many of them would remember the infomercials that we used to run. And it was an established brand. It has a personality. It has a pizzazz to it. And that's what brands do. There are sunglasses out there, for example, like Gucci, just to name a few, that have famous brand names attached to the sunglasses, but they may not be as good as our sunglasses because we elected to sell them at a lower price. But because they are a brand, that brand is worth an extra $100, an extra $150. So brand is very important, and of course, marketing is extremely important.
So would you say that marketing done right is the quickest path to the sale?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you do your marketing correctly, you're going to sell your products. People are going to respond. They're going to buy your product. You're going to make a profit, and you're going to reinvest those funds into more advertising, and you're going to be successful.
How old are you now, Joe?
Right now, I am 72. I do 25 chin-ups. I mean, I do 100 push-ups. You'd never guess I was 72. And I have strength and endurance. Well, a lot of it is because I've followed a healthy path in my life, and another part of it is because of the products that we have been developing over the past 5 years, our anti-aging stem cell research type products. Yeah, people don't recognize the fact that I'm 72. They find it sometimes a little bit hard to believe.
And where are you currently residing at right now?
Well, right now, I am in Maui, Hawaii. I'm looking out over the ocean in my beautiful home here in an area called Wailea, Kihei area. And it's a beautiful day, 80 degrees, a lot of people on the beach. I'm up on the second story looking over. That's very nice.
Can you explain to my listeners, who do you have that is in your corner to help you maximize your market?
I would say my desire to help others. That's my sole purpose in life, is to help others. You know, it reminds me, when I sometimes give a talk, I'll start the talk off by saying that there's a spiritual philosophy, a spiritual principle that says whatever you focus on expands. So if you focus on your business, what happens? And the audience says, oh, it expands, it grows. I said, that's right. And if you focus on your health, what happens? And everybody says, oh, you stay healthy. And I says, okay, what happens when you focus on money? And everybody says, oh, you make more money. And I said, no, that's not true. Money is a symbol. Money is a symbol of work and effort. So what expands? The work and the effort, not the money. So I said, what you need to focus on if you want to make a lot of money is helping others. And, you know, I've devoted my life to that, either by providing a really good product. For example, Blue Blockers helps protect your eyes. And not only that, when we were advertising it, we told people about the dangers of ultraviolet light and how it damaged your eye, what it caused, and the disadvantages of blue light and all that kind of stuff. And As a consequence, we educated the public, and everybody then became aware of the importance of blocking the ultraviolet light. Well, before that, nobody really advertised it. In fact, the Sunglass Association in the very beginning were really upset with us because here we were bringing up something that none of their members actually could promote because they weren't blocking all the ultraviolet light. In other words, helping others, that could mean putting aside a portion of your profits for charities to help various groups. It could mean giving people advice. It could be publishing a series of books. When you publish the books, you're leaving a legacy. You're helping others who read those books, and you're sharing your knowledge. I used to teach seminars for several years. I've written 6 books. I've given many talks and many speeches, and from all of that, I've helped people. I've inspired them. I've given them hope. I've helped people, and that's really what's been the prime motivation for me and the thing that I've always relied on to, you know, really help society. That's my goal. That's my only goal.
This is Arthur Robinson, Jr., reporting for Michael Sinoff's ArtDefineSeminar.com.
Let's talk about psychological triggers. What inspired you to write that?
An interesting question, because what happened, I wrote 3 books. I used to give these seminars, and these seminars were really interesting. They helped a lot of people, and a lot of people went up after the seminars and became quite successful. I remember one of our first participants was Victoria's Secret, when they only had 1 store. I remember a lot of very famous people who weren't famous when they came to my seminar, but as a result of what they learned, became very successful. One of whom was a farmer. He was a farmer, and he sold grapefruits. And he went to my seminar, wrote an ad, and that ad ran for 10 years, made him a fortune. So I decided to sit down and write a book about my experience in the seminar, and it ended up being like 1,000 pages. I mean, I kept writing and writing, and I'm just trying to convey all the things that I taught and all the things that I learned. And so I finally decided, well, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. I'm going to break it down into 3 books and cover 3 different topics. And so the 3 topics I covered, the one book was Advertising Secrets of the Written Word, and that was on copywriting. And the second one was Marketing Secrets of a Mail Order Maverick, and that was on print advertising, mail order, direct marketing, direct mail, all that kind of stuff. And then the third book was Television Secrets for Marketing Success. It was pretty prominent on TV, both at QVC, QVC throughout the world. I was in Germany on QVC, in London on QVC, and also through the infomercials, which ran with the Blue Blocker brand for almost 6 years. That was the extent of these books that I wrote, and I started getting publicity for the books. And what was interesting was that most of the publicity was surrounding chapter 19 in my copywriting book on psychological triggers. It seemed that fascinated a lot of people, and it was always one of the favorite things in my class. Psychological triggers. Now, what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to set an environment for you in a selling environment. They're to build trust, and they're to trigger a sale. I decided, you know what? I'm going to create a separate book. I'm going to take chapter 19 and really expand on it and cite some really good examples that I just didn't have the time or the patience to cover in my book on copywriting. So I came out with a book called Triggers, and the subtitle is 30 Sales Tools You Could Use to Control the Mind of Your Prospect to Motivate, Influence, and Persuade. It's out of print because it's been a pretty good selling book. But I'm here on Maui actually revising it, and I should have that book revised and ready to go by this fall or winter. It covers the 30 psychological triggers that cause people to buy. And like I said, they either set the environment for selling. In other words, when you walk into a very high-level type of, let's say, an art store, and you see these paintings on the wall, and then you walk into another store and you see prints all over the floor and pictures hung up and price tags on everything, and you get a completely different impression. The first impression you get is one of, well, this is a fancy place, so the prices must be high. And the second impression you get from the other place is that this must be a bargain. These prices must be pretty low. In other words, you set the environment, and the environment could be set in a lot of different ways. And the second thing you want to do is you want to build trust. You want to build trust so that people trust you and like you and respect you and feel comfortable ordering from you. And the third purpose of the triggers are to trigger the sale. In other words, what causes you to all of a sudden say, okay, that's it, I'm going to buy. And so that's what the book Triggers accomplished. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, you did. So once people like you, respect you, and trust you, that's when people want to do business with you?
Yeah, you've got to develop a level of trust. And in order to do that, first of all, you need to be honest. I have found that the consumer is a lot sharper than you think they are, and they can see where you're covering something up or you're trying to hide something. For example, we have one trigger, raising objections. In other words, if there's something that is inherently wrong with your product, I've always believed in being very honest and saying right up front, hey, this product is missing something, and therefore, we just want you to be aware of it. I then go to resolve the objection. I say, well, even though it doesn't make sense, the product still is very good and a very good bargain because of such and such, and I go into that. Now, let me give you an example. We were selling a thermostat. Now, this was a thermostat that a manufacturer brought to me, and I looked at it, and I said, my God, this thing's ugly. It uses old technology. Who'd ever buy this? And then they explained to me about how easy it is to install and all this kind of stuff. And I tried it, and I was really impressed with it. Well, when I wrote the ad, I told the story of the manufacturer presenting the product to me, and I looking at it and saying, this product really is stupid. It's old technology. It looks ugly. It has a stupid name, MagicStat. I just don't think this is a really good product. But then I go into the fact that the manufacturer insisted that I at least install it and told me how simple it was, because the thermostats only use 24 volts, and the yellow wire goes to the yellow lead, and the red wire goes to the red lead, and it's just really easy to install. So then I talked about the fact that I did install it. It was really simple. And then I said, and you know something? This was the most exciting, the greatest, the best thermostat I've ever imagined. It saves energy. It makes the house so much more comfortable because of the new electronics, and blah, blah, blah. So I raised the objections, and then I resolved them. Well, we got a terrific response. People really appreciated it. And not only that, we got responses from people who said, you know, I read your entire ad. I'm not in the market for a thermostat, but you had me so enticed that I had to read the whole ad. So that's an example. You raise the objection and you resolve it. So if there's something wrong with your product, raise the objection and then see if you can come up with a resolution that makes sense for the product. Well, I can give you another example. One of our triggers is the feeling of involvement or ownership. Feeling of involvement or ownership. This is a story about a guy, and I talk about this in my book, about a guy who was a television salesman in this appliance store. And he had the best track record of all the other salesmen. He sold more televisions than everybody else combined. And he was retiring, and at his retirement party, he got up to talk, and he said that he would reveal at his retirement party the secret for his success. And he gets up there and he says, ladies and gentlemen, the real secret of my success is that I always stand near the door. People come in, I observe them, and when they walk up to a television, this was before remote control, when they walk up to a television and start touching and turning the knobs, I know that they're a very good prospect and I go after them. And so it was that feeling of involvement or ownership, in other words, where they start turning the knobs, they start touching it, they start clicking it, where they really get involved in the product. And that's something that's very powerful with the internet, because with the internet you have all these tools. You have video, you have audio, you have touching buttons which would bring you to certain places. The feeling of involvement or ownership is really important. And of course, with all my triggers, I go to specific examples of how they're used and why they're used and how you could use them for any business, whether it be a product or a service.
What exactly is copywriting? And can copywriting be very effective for a business owner or an infopreneur?
First of all, copywriting is not that hard. I have taken people at my seminar and taught them how to write copy, and they have gone out and become very, very successful. There's no mystery to it. There's no secret to it. Now, what is important, and that is that you have to immerse yourself and become an expert in that particular area. But once you do learn how to write your own copy, and by the way, you are the expert in your product. So there's nobody better to write copy. But after you become that copywriter, after you start writing copy, you have within your grasp the capability of a very, very powerful tool, the ability to communicate through writing. And by the way, just being a copywriter, it's only part of it. When I do TV ads or if I do an infomercial, I'll always write out the copy first. because I want to get out all the salient points. I want to get out all the advantages. And I do that by becoming basically an expert in the product and then also an expert in writing copy. And you can learn it. It is very easy to learn. You want to know a couple of secrets of being able to write copy? Aside from reading my books, which I really strongly recommend, that is experience life. Go out there and do things you've never done before. Create things for your bucket list. You know, just go out and experience as many different things. What I found was that the people who have experienced life, who have gone out there and have done many, many different things, make the best copywriters. The second thing I could advise you on is become an absolute expert with your particular product, whatever it is, the product or service. You become the expert, and you learn everything there is to know about that. You cannot write effective copy without doing that, because people will pick that up, and they really respect people who really know their product. That's my suggestion there.
I know that you were in the U.S. Army, and you basically joined forces with the CIA. Can you explain to my listeners about that powerful experience?
Well, I was with military intelligence in Frankfurt, Germany. I was kind of an expert in the German language. They sent me to two very intensive German schools while I was in the military, and they assigned me to a branch that involved electronic surveillance.
What is electronic surveillance?
Either planting bugs or detecting bugs. In other words, like the Watergate bug or things like that. So they assigned me into that unit, and I worked there with civilian clothes, never wore a uniform. Occasionally, the military would assign me to the CIA to look after their Russian defectors. There were a number of Russians that were defecting at that particular time. It was in the middle of the Cold War. And so I would work with the CIA in that respect. And then after I actually got out of the Army, I continued working with the CIA because I was right in the middle of an operation. And I stayed with them for 2 or 3 months, and then I left and went back to the States. So it was a really interesting time. I saw things that I'm really not too privileged to talk about, but they were extremely interesting, and I had a lot of very fun experiences. It was probably one of my most enjoyable periods of my life. I really enjoyed that. The book that I'm actually just finishing up is a book that I wrote 30 years ago, and it has all my success principles and a lot of my experience in it, and it impacted so many people in so many different ways that I decided I would reissue it and update it, and that's exactly what I've done. So I've got like 3 stages in my life, one leading up to 30 years ago when I wrote that first book, which, by the way, was called Success Forces. 20 years later, when I wrote my trilogy, the 3 books that I had mentioned, plus Triggers. And I also wrote another book called The Adweek Copywriting Manual, which is another good book to get on copywriting. Either get that book or Advertising Secrets, because they're both primarily the same, although The Adweek Copywriting Manual is more current and contains more internet information on it as a result. And then I guess maybe after I finish these 2 books, there'll be a couple more books coming out on what's happened to me in the last 10 years. So I've got a little bit of a following. A funny story that happened to me: I was at a convention offering some of these anti-aging products that we were selling, and there were like 400 doctors at this convention, and this doctor walks up to me and he says, "Are you Joe Sugarman, the marketing guy?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "Oh my God." He says, "I don't believe this." And I said, "Why? What's going on?" He says, "Well, you're number one on my bucket list, and Lance Armstrong is number 2, and number 3 is some other famous person." And I said, "Wow." I said, "You got to be kidding. Could I be number 1 on your bucket? You must have read my books." And he said, "No, never read your books." I said, "Well, you must have been to a seminar I've given or a speech I've given." He says, "No, I've never been to a seminar, never been to a speech." I said, "Well, then how could I be number 1 on your bucket list?" And he said, "Well, very simply," he says, "I'm a doctor, but I'm into marketing, and I go to all these marketing conventions, and your name keeps popping up every time I go there. And I just was so curious, who is this guy, Joe Sugarman? What is he about, and what could I learn from him? And here you are." That was a funny story. You know, I'm glad I was influential in helping this guy, or at least building his curiosity to get to meet me. And, of course, he became a friend, and I've been helping him since.
You're listening to an interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminar.com.
Was copywriting something that you was always passionate about, or did you build your dream over the period of time?
I was always pretty passionate about it. When I was in grammar school, we were always given writing assignments, and I'd write something, try to add humor to it, and then I'd have to present it to the class. And I'd read it, and everybody would laugh, and I just loved that feedback, and I just enjoyed writing. And then when I was in high school, I joined the school newspaper, both as a photographer and a writer. Actually, in my senior year, I started my own teenage magazine, and that was successful, and went off to college, joined the school newspaper there, While I was in college, my dad calls me up and says, Joe, we can't afford to send you back to college anymore. I've lost a lot of money in my business. It's really very costly for me. Please, I want you to think about heading back home. And I says, well, maybe I could get a job out here or work and somehow make my own money. So he says, well, why don't you give it a try? So I did. And the first thing I did was I went to a restaurant that I had been frequenting. And, you know, I'm sitting there contemplating, now, what do I do? And the owner came up to me and he says, you go to the university? And I said, yeah, I do. And he says, well, he says, I've got to ask you a really important question. How do you reach those students? I mean, how do you communicate with them to get them to come to my restaurant? And I says, well, you advertise in the school paper, but you put an ad in that is totally different, that's off the wall, that nobody'd ever anticipate. And he said, well, gee whiz, what kind of ad would that be? And I said, well, I said, why don't you let me write something? And I'll put it in for you. And he says, well, if it works, he says, what do you want me to pay? And I says, well, you just give me free meals. I'm having a rough time supporting myself right now, and I think free meals will be just fine. Well, it was a chicken and rib place, and, you know, if you have chicken and ribs every day for 2, 3, 4 days, they get kind of greasy. I mean, it's not very pleasant. But anyway, I wrote this ad. It was a crazy ad. It ran in the school paper, and I was kind of embarrassed, actually. I said, my God, what if he doesn't like this ad? And what if it doesn't work? And so all these thoughts ran through my mind, and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to go out and take a look. I want to go to the restaurant and see if any more kids are there. So I went to the restaurant, and before I even got close to it, there was cars parked all over the place. There was a line of people trying to get in, and they were holding like pieces of cardboard, pieces of wood, because what I did in the ad was I said, come to the Old Hickory Barbecue Restaurant on such and such a street, and students will get this special price, let's say $1.69. They can get this blah, 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 blah. And is there a catch? Yes, there is a catch. You have to bring the top of a Brinks armored car in order to get the special. So all the kids, using their imagination, they came up with these pieces of plastic, cardboard, wood, all marked the top of Brinks armored car. And they're sitting out there waiting in line, waiting to get in. Well, when I got there, I parked and I walked into the front door ahead of everybody and I went up to the owner. He sees me and he comes running up to me and says, Joe, I don't know what the hell you did, but we are doing exceptionally well. I want you to continue doing this. And I said, well, gee whiz, maybe there's an answer here. So I started doing ads for various restaurants and clothing stores and ice cream parlors and, well, you name it. And the deal was they would give me free food or free clothes or free this or free that. It was easy for them, and it helped me because I was the best-dressed, best-fed guy on campus. I didn't realize it at the time, but I had formed my own ad agency, and I was making my own money. And of course, some of them I would charge, and I would get cash for it, so I was able to support myself. So that's how I actually finished or got almost through college. It was in my senior year where I had one semester left, and the Army drafted me. And I tried to get out of it because I was in ROTC, which is the Reserve Officer Training Corps, and I was going to be an officer in a month. And they said, no, you forgot to register with the university and get a deferment and all this kind of stuff. You're going to go to basic training. So I had to go off to basic training. So anyway, that was my college experience, and it turned out to be pretty good. It was a good experience, and I enjoyed doing what I was doing, but it also created in my own mind the possibilities available with writing your own copy and being a copywriter and being creative.
What are some of the triggers that you have found to be the most effective in selling your products and services?
I have found storytelling to be a very effective tool. A lot of the ads that I do, I start telling a story. You know, the supplier comes to me, presents the product, here's my reaction. Or it could involve just something that has nothing to do with the product, just to tell the story, to get people involved, to get people reading. So storytelling is a very good trigger. It's a very helpful thing for you to get into the story, to help you avoid the typical advertising babble that a lot of advertisers give you. In other words, you know it's advertising. But mine are stories, and people love stories. Another thing is what I call satisfaction conviction. You know what a trial period is. If you don't like the product, you return it within a few weeks, and you get your money back. I like to go beyond that. Satisfaction conviction goes beyond what typically would be offered to the consumer as a trial period, so far beyond that the consumer thinks to himself, hey, wait a second, they're going to get really ripped off if they're not honest about what they're saying. So, for example, with blue blocker sunglasses, we would say order a pair, and if you're not happy, either when you receive them or 10 years from now, return them and you'll get all your money back. In other words, there was no time period. They could return their blue blockers and get all their money back. That was a satisfaction conviction. I was saying basically that you are going to be so satisfied and you're going to be so convinced that you're going to feel very comfortable in buying this product because you can return it any time in your lifetime. I found that the strongest trigger, believe it or not, was honesty. Well, I've explained a couple of the ads where I honestly expressed my dissatisfaction with some of the features of the product. And people then trust you. They build a level of trust, you develop a very good level of believability. And so those are the triggers that probably are among my most favorite. But again, there are 30 of them, and certainly very helpful.
What is your favorite trigger, the one you've used with great success?
Well, I would say that satisfaction conviction is the best one for me. And the reason I say that is because very often when I'd use a very strong satisfaction conviction, like if you're not happy with this product, I'll send somebody to your door and pick it up so you don't have to pay any expense or something like that. Right now, by the way, there are some companies that do that. But back when I was doing it, this was very unusual. But the reason I liked it especially is because I was able to determine that it doubled or even tripled response. In other words, I'd have that satisfaction conviction at the end of a, let's say, of a 1,000-word ad. And I would triple response when I put in a more forceful satisfaction conviction. So I found it through testing and through the success I had that it was probably my favorite and probably the most effective.
I want to ask you some powerful words, and on a scale from 1 to 5, 1 meaning great and 5 meaning terrible. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Copywriting.
Well, that's number 1. You have that skill, and you have the ability and the power to influence millions of people. There are situations in which you try to influence somebody. I knew a salesman in Detroit who was in the Guinness Book of World Records, Joe Girard, and he was able to sell 6-7 cars a day, broke the record for the most amount of cars sold by a dealership, and he explains how he did it and all that kind of stuff. But he contacted me, and he says, you know, I can sell 6-7 cars a day, but you can sell millions of things in a matter of a day, because you have the power to be able to communicate to people. And that, of course, comes with copywriting. Number 1.
Accountability.
I think what you're talking about is integrity. And, boy, that is number 1. That's in all my ads. I mean, everything. I say what I'm going to say, and it's the truth, and I don't lie, and that's part of building trust.
Brandon.
Well, that's number 1, again, because as I discussed before, if you reach the point where you actually created a brand, then you know and you can be assured of the fact that you've reached the pinnacle as far as marketing is concerned.
Marketing.
Well, again, number 1. Well, you're not giving me much of a variety here.
Success.
I think success is probably such a loose term, I'd probably give it a 3. I don't think that's the important thing. I think success comes when you help others. Success comes when you really are helpful in society and you help people and you contribute. And success will come. So striving for it, I don't know if that's really as important as focusing on the more important things of helping others, providing a good service or product, and really being there to help society.
Value.
Again, that's truthfulness. It's integrity. It's honesty. You want to show value. You have to give that a 2. I mean, it's important that people feel that they're getting value. I don't care if you're a multimillionaire. You don't want to be ripped off. And as a consequence, value is very important, that you establish value for your customer, that you show them that they have value, that what you're selling has value, and you go from there.
Family.
Well, I think probably that's number 1. I think it's important. Family is number 1. And you can always postpone that call and postpone that business meeting, but when the family calls, that takes precedent with me.
Commitment.
The best way to describe that, commitment in terms of never giving up. And I think that's probably the reason for my success, is that I've just never given up. You know, I've been defeated. I've lost a great deal of money. I lost opportunities, all sorts of negative things. But I never gave up because I always believed I was going to be a success, and all these experiences were just experiences that I had to go through, and that made me stronger.
Profits.
Well, you want to be in business to make a profit, that's for sure. You don't want to be in business to lose money. I don't know how I'll answer that, really.
Encouragement.
again, it's number one for me. I am there to inspire other people. There's no question, and that is the purpose of my entire life.
You have this philosophy that has helped you through the roughest of times. Everything is falling apart, and you are just as calm as can be. How do you do it?
Well, the philosophy I have, that everything that happens to you in life, everything, is for your benefit. You may not realize it at the time. And failure, sometimes it really hurts. But even failure is a benefit. So everything that happens in your life is for a purpose, and it's to help you. And if you go on with that philosophy and you say, well, I don't know how this is going to help me, but I know in the long run it will, then you're a lot more relaxed. You know, I have this philosophy that never be attached to any outcome. So if I'm not attached to any outcome, it fails. Okay, well, it fails. You know, that's life. So anyway, that's my philosophy. Everything happens for the best. And if you believe that, life, it's a lot easier.
Do a lot of your principles apply to the Internet?
Oh, every one of them. Every one of them. They all apply to the Internet. The difference is the media. It's like on television, there are certain things that are very important. On radio, there are certain things that are more important. But all the principles remain the same. In other words, if you're writing copy, the same copywriting principles apply. If you're doing a video, the same video concepts, the same marketing concepts apply. It'll never become outdated, these books that I've written and also the principles. But the method in which you go out and deliver the message, that may change over time. And, of course, with the Internet, that is a major, major, major marketing tool that never existed before. And you know what it does? It levels the playing field. Now, anybody, I don't care what color, what race, how much money you have, where you're at in life, you could be successful on the Internet. And a lot of people are proving that every day.
Do you have any last pearls of wisdom for my listeners?
Yeah, actually, we're talking about pearls. I always believe that we're all given a bucket of oysters, and in one of the oysters is a very expensive pearl. You're given that bucket, and you start to open up the oysters, and they're kind of tough on your hands. You cut yourself. They're hard to open. But a lot of people will give up. They'll say, this is too hard for me, and they'll stop. But if you keep opening them, you're going to find that pearl. It might be the second one. It might be the tenth one. It might be the last one. But it's there. And so it's just a matter of being persistent and never giving up. And I can guarantee you, you'll be successful eventually.
Thank you, Joe. For more great interviews like this, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.